Welcome to Community Forum, a weekly call-in program produced at the studios of KSKA. Opinions expressed are those of the guest, host, and callers, and do not represent the views of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. And now, the host of Community Forum, Nellie Moore.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Community Forum on this Wednesday. It's kind of a blustery but nice day out there. Hope you're enjoying the day, the week. After a rather incredible election day yesterday, I want to welcome to the studio today Chief Rob Yoon. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here, Nellie.
I wanted, I'd been talking earlier to some of your crew saying that I had missed the opportunity to have you on here sooner. Usually, you know, we do this kind of on a regular basis between the mayor and the chief of police, and I kind of dropped the ball there, so we're going to play a little bit of catch up today. You became chief in
October of 2006.
Mm-hmm. Following Walt Vonnegut.
That's correct.
And let's see, you've been through West Point.
Dun, 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 barely.
Barely. But you've been here in Anchorage for a long time and been very active in the community.
That's correct, over 30 years.
Yeah, and as chief, you're also active with different boards and commissions. Anchorage Youth Court, I think.
That's correct. Native Justice Center, Sean Lute, all very worthwhile endeavors. In fact, I'm working with Mal Tosi right now on the Pride. Mal's putting together a board for working with youth after school and during school. So that's encouraging, very encouraging. And
yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
He was just here last week talking about that, so that's great. I want to remind our listeners, this is a live call-in program. If you're listening in the afternoon, if you're listening in the evening, it's been pre-recorded. Don't try to call. This afternoon, however, our number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or the toll-free is 1-888-353-5752. And you can also email in your questions at communityforum@kska.org. My guest today is Anchorage Police Chief Rob Yoon. Let's talk a little bit about where we are this year. We're coming up on the end, at least, of the calendar year. Anchorage seems to have had just a little less violent crime this year as far as homicides are concerned.
Well, we're still vetting a lot of our reports, but I can tell you that so far this year, and we don't like to talk about it too much for obvious reasons.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, but we've had 9 homicides as of today, and that's relative to where we were at this time last year, where we had 20 homicides, and we ended the year with 25.
Wow.
So we're encouraged. Like most crime statistics, though, they're dependent on social and economic conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So, but again, it's very encouraging.
And, of course, the economic conditions aren't that great right now. Everybody is, you know, there's a lot of difficulty going on right now with home mortgages, people losing their jobs, a lot of layoffs. Are you seeing an uptick in burglaries or that type of crime?
It's hard to tell right now. We are seeing, we're getting a lot of property crimes in. And property crime is one of those things that it seems to be related to other types of crime. For instance, drug problems. And as you say, people who are having problems just making bills. And, of course, it's no excuse to go commit a crime. In fact, we have the usual we have very consistent suspects in a lot of our property-type crimes. If we were to make one arrest, it's not unusual for that person to have been involved in, you know, several other property crimes.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, as far as the neighborhood is concerned, and we'll get into a little bit of neighborhood watch and stuff in a while, but I noticed that a few weeks ago I was driving home and there were police cars on one of the streets nearby, and apparently a couple of homes had been broken into on that street in that afternoon, or at least that was my understanding. Is that pretty common in Anchorage right
now?
Yeah,
burglaries are common in Anchorage.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, they are, and a lot of times they happen when people are away at
work.
Now, if you're concerned about your specific neighborhood in the area and you want to know, you know, just how many burglaries are in that particular area, you know, you can go to muni.org and go to the APD go to the police, click on police, and you go to the APD homepage. And in the upper right-hand side, the upper left-hand side of the website, there's a link to the crime map. And that is the, you click on that, and you can go to a neighborhood around town, and you can see what kind of crimes have been going on there recently, and we update that.
Mm-hmm. Pretty regularly?
Yes, ma'am. We update it every day.
Wow, that's interesting. Somebody emailed in a question about that, as a matter of fact, wondering how they could use information from the police department in deciding where to live. Let's see. I moved from rural Alaska to Anchorage, and someone suggested looking at the very place we were just discussing. And let's see. But she's wondering, is there any public education or interpretation of what the maps mean in terms of daily life? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either, but I know you can get on. I mean, you can click onto the map. You can click on the neighborhood. You can click on the crimes that have happened there. The only crimes that are not going to be reflected on there are sexual assaults. All sexual assaults, we will show the sexual assaults, but they're all located at 4501 Elmore, and that's for protection of victims. So mm-hmm. The sexual assaults are actually being logged on there, but the location of those sexual assaults, again, for the protection of the victim, are all centralized at 4501 Elmore, which happens to be the police department.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. Anchorage has not had a good history as far as violent crimes against women. What kinds of programs have been put in place? I know in the last few years certain things have come up to try to improve those statistics, and is this something that you have a group of people working on, or how is that?
Well, let's start with domestic violence first. With domestic violence, one of the things we have is a collaborative effort between DHHS, Department of Health and Human Services, APD, the Muni Prosecutor's Office, and AWAKE. And what we've done is we've developed an Anchorage Domestic Violence Prevention Project. And with that, we have two full-time officers from APD who are assigned to do follow-up with defendants who are presently released on bail. They've already been arrested for the domestic violence. And these are no-notice inspections to ensure that those people are acting within the parameters of their bail conditions. Mm-hmm. We were never able to do that before because we didn't have real-world access to the bail conditions. So with the cooperation of the Muni Prosecutor, what we've done is ensure that those bail conditions are logged immediately and made accessible to all police officers. So what we've done is assign the two full-time officers to the prosecutor's office. So not only are they checking on the defendants, but they're also checking on the welfare of victims. And as a result of that, we've had a 50% increase in the violations of the conditions of releases, but we've had a 75% decrease in the unlawful contacts between the defendants and the victims. So we're hoping that that this will continue, and it precludes it would just preclude revictimization on the part of those victims.
Mm-hmm. I think that's been a big complaint probably across the entire nation, is a woman goes in and says, hey, my partner is beating me up, and she gets a protective order, which is a piece of paper. And oftentimes, like you're saying, the conditions aren't known. The police don't have inside access, and there is a repeat offense, and people get cynical about those protective orders.
Understood. And I think that we're addressing that. And the fact that those conditions of bail are now accessible for all officers through dispatch in real time, it's showing results.
Mm-hmm. So when you say real-world access, you just mean that you have someone at the prosecutor's office who sees those as they come up?
Someone who's there.
The bail conditions.
During the bail conditions and enters the bail conditions for us.
Mm-hmm.
And then the officers are aware of what those bail conditions. So you have to remember that we have contacts with we could have contacts with defendants involved in domestic violence under other. We could stop them for a traffic fine. We could run into them in another type of a situation.
Mm-hmm.
So we would know what their conditions of bail are. And if they happen to be with the victim at the time and they're not allowed to be with the victim at the time by court order, then we have probable cause to arrest them.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk a little bit, too, about racism. There have been numerous studies out that show that Alaska Natives have a high percentage of their populations are in jails, and probably other people of color, too. I'm just mostly up on our particular situation. Are there programs where there can be more awareness, or how does a police chief, how do you approach a situation like that?
Well, the first thing you have to do is understand that we have a non-biased policing policy. So APD decisions by policy and by law, obviously, too, but by policy, is that we're based on the totality of the circumstances and not solely based on any race or gender or ethnicity, sexual orientation, or economic status. We teach officers in the academy cultural awareness. We work in concert with the Police Minority Community Policing Task Force. And, what we do is we vet complaints of racism thoroughly when they come in.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to remember, before we hire folks, we do try and screen them for certain psychological profiles that would not lead them to have a propensity to, to take actions that would be considered mm-hmm. to be racially motivated.
Is there a large enough pool of people wanting to be police officers that that say you might not place as much importance on that kind of investigation as you might if you had a lot more people looking for jobs? I guess I'm trying to say is it easier for someone with a propensity to prejudice to slip through the cracks if you're really in need of more officers and you don't have that many trained?
I appreciate the question. I guess the bottom line is we're not lowering our standards or mm-hmm. our screening as we try and expand the department. We have criteria for recruitment, and there are certain steps that people have to go through, of which two are based on are psychologically based.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't obviously screen out everyone who may have
sure.
a propensity for that, but we sure try to.
You are listening to Community Forum on KSKA today. My guest is Anchorage Police Chief Rob Hune. Give us a call if you have questions or comments. It's live in the afternoon. It's pre-recorded in the evening, so you can't call in during the 7 o'clock show. Right now, though, the number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Picking up on an earlier email, let's see. I'm concerned about the increasing militarization of police departments. As a relative of an Anchorage police officer and citizen of Alaska, it appears there is increasing emphasis on firearms and SWAT teams. And Robin is saying, I think it's she would like to see more training of officers in driving safely, since many accidents involve vehicles rather than weapons. Is this something that...
It certainly is part of our training. In fact, I just left emergency vehicle operation training myself just last week. So we have a very vibrant in-service training program, not to mention you get a minimum of 40 hours of emergency vehicle operator training during the academy.
Mm-hmm. And let's see, she goes on to say, more emphasis on connecting with the public so that people accept police officers as a positive rather than as a negative.
Sure. And we've got several programs. Obviously, the one in which we do some outreach to the kids is our partnership with the school district with our school resource officer program.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a citizens academy that we run for about 3 months. And we've had 8 of those so far. And It gives us an opportunity to interact with folks, regular folks who want to learn more about the police department. Like, why does it take 3 police officers to make a traffic stop on the Glen Highway? You know, and we explain to them what those potential situations could have been. Could have been a felony stop or something. But they are trained by police officers who come in and actually train folks in the academy to give them some insights. Plus, we schedule ride-alongs with the police officers mm-hmm. as a result of that. It's a very good program, and these folks have formed their own alumni association. They worked with us at AFN. They work with us in terms of doing some follow-ups on property crimes. Property crimes, as you mentioned before, is one of our greatest frustrations. Mm-hmm. So what our Citizens Academy alumni were doing was actually calling people who had suspended cases to ask if there had been any changes in those cases, and it was very helpful to us.
Hmm. Okay, we're going to move on to the phones now and get caught up here. Let's see, Eric on line one. Welcome to the show.
Hi, yes, this is Eric. I remember this situation where there was women and children that were run over on the Glen Highway. There was a 12-year-old girl that was one of the victims family members that was actually killed. There was a spokesman that later came on and almost accused of the 12-year-old of alcoholism or drinking alcohol. I think that just, you know, honestly, when stereotypes start entering the picture by police spokesmen, that this is a real serious offense to accuse a 12-year-old of drinking during the time that they were, hit by a car. This is a real serious type of issue where, women and children of Anchorage are being literally just almost accused of causing part of their problem.
Okay, Chief, I remember that incident. I do recall that the alcohol information was included in whatever was in the paper or something. And I was, first of all, shocked and hoping the information was incorrect, but it wasn't.
That's correct, Nellie. My recollection of the case was just that. It was a tragedy. And you have to remember that our spokesperson is going to give as much information as possible to the community as it relates to a certain situation. In this case, alcohol was a factor, and getting that information out was part of his job.
Is there something if people like Eric have comments that they want to tell the police department directly, is there a way for them to do that?
Absolutely. What you do is you dial 786-8595. That's my office. And what we'll do is every time somebody calls in with a complaint or a concern, that's generally delegated to whoever might be in charge of the specific area that would deal with that. In this case, if they have a concern about how a spokesperson does their job or a complaint on any officer for that matter, they can call in to the department. We have our internal affairs office that looks into complaints, and we have a very strict guideline on how complaints are handled.
Mm-hmm. Were there complaints that came from the community about that particular incident?
I have no recollection of it. There was concern from the community, particularly as it might relate to some of the potential rural displacement issues that we're going to be dealing with mm-hmm. as a community. Mm-hmm. And it certainly raised the level of concern.
And you've met with different groups and have been involved with the Native Justice people. Did any of them bring that up? Or
that was not brought up to me personally.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's move on now to Mike on line 8. How about line 10 and Carmen? Welcome to the show.
Hi. We have a business downtown, and we've had problems in the past with drug dealers in our parking lot and in the alley and so forth. And when we've made calls, the response is almost like we're bothering the dispatcher. And I don't know, is there a drug task force that we should be calling rather than the police?
No, you shouldn't. You should be calling dispatch. And if you request an officer, we'll be sending an officer out there. We get a lot of calls, and you have to understand that our calls are oftentimes prioritized. Certainly life and injury comes first. But if you're calling and you're not getting the response you think you should be getting, then I would encourage you to ask to speak to a supervisor.
Okay, because it's something that, especially in the wintertime, as it gets darker, we see the incidences rise, and then our customers are less comfortable coming and being downtown and so forth. And so we're just trying to find a happy medium, you know, not have a police state in the downtown, but have a safe place in the downtown so that people aren't uncomfortable.
Sure, I understand that. And I, like I said, dispatch has to prioritize the calls that we get. Did you notice a better situation downtown this summer with our foot patrols?
Yeah, this summer was better, yeah. I'm just worried about the winter now coming on with it getting darker. It seems like it always goes kind of on the uptick with the winter. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I would suggest that.
It was better this summer.
Good. Glad to hear that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
The number of police officers working has been an issue in Anchorage for a long time. I think over a couple of mayoral administrations, the police union and others have said, and some study have said, you know, we need more men on the street, more police people on the street. How are we doing now?
Sure. Let me just give you a quick snapshot of where we're at. Right now, we're authorized 418 sworn officers, and we actually have 382. We're authorized 177 non-sworn support and technical staff, and we have 168. That number varies in terms of actually how many warm bodies we have because we're constantly looking at people who are retiring, things like that. This December 1st, we're looking at starting another new academy. So far, we've got 33 new hires committed to that. We're going to try and get 38 in the door. So since we did our strategic plan and we had a commitment from the mayor and the assembly to expand the department to an additional 93 officers, we've had an increase as of today of 59. Now, that has varied up and down depending, like I said before, mm-hmm. on how many folks have retired or whatever. Mm-hmm. So our goal is to still get 93 new officers on the street by July 1st of 2009.
And looking at the rate of people that you're pumping out every academy, how are we doing?
We keep about 60% of the folks who start the academy. Mm-hmm. The academy itself is 24 weeks long, and then when the recruits graduate the academy, for another 3 months they're with a field training officer mm-hmm. before they're cut loose to start responding to calls for service on their own.
So how does a person get into the academy, and once they do, what can they expect?
Sure. Well, first thing I would say, and I appreciate the opportunity to get this out, you can go to www.joinapd.org, and you can apply by submitting the request to test form. And after that, there's initial testing that you attend. Usually, we get about anywhere from 1,600 to 1,800 people who put an application in per year.
Wow.
We only have half of those people, though, show up for the testing. And the people who pass the tests are about half again of those. For instance, I can tell you that we had 1,894 apply in 2007. We had 975 show up to test, and we had 405 of those who tested actually pass the test. So after that, there's a physical agility assessment. Then you go through a preliminary interview. Then there's the psychological assessment, a polygraph examination, a medical evaluation, a background investigation, and then it's brought up to my chain of command where we look at the file. At that time, you have to remember, too, we don't know if this is a male, a female. We don't know what the ethnic background of the person is. They're just assigned a number.
Mm-hmm.
And then based on the entire file on that person, we determine if we're going to make an offer of employment to them, a conditional offer of employment, and they would start at $27.02 an hour.
Mm-hmm. And at what point do they get paid? Do they get paid while they're in the academy?
While they're in the academy. In order to attend the Anchorage Police Department Academy as an Anchorage Police Department recruit, you are hired from day one.
That makes a good case for signing up.
I think so. And I would really encourage people once again to go to www.joinapd.org.
Mm-hmm. What happens if a person goes, say, you know, halfway through it and for some reason, how much notice do they have that they're going to be, like, for some reason rejected? Or,
well, we work very closely because we've invested in these recruits from the time we started to do the background work on them to the time we've actually had them in the academy, hired them. We used to lose a lot of people in the firearms portion, so we initiated remediation, and it was successful. Mm-hmm. And not that we didn't do remediation, but it was more intense remediation. and so what we do is we identify where some of the strengths and weaknesses are of every recruit, and we work towards bringing those weaknesses up and capitalizing on those strengths.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If I can, we also have a sponsorship program. So as soon as somebody is offered employment with us, they're assigned a sponsor. We have volunteer sponsors who are incumbent officers who work and kind of help the recruit and his family stay with us.
Yeah, like a mentor.
Yes, ma'am.
Now that you brought up the family aspect of it, it must be really difficult for, you know, someone to make a transition from, say, you know, a 9-to-5 and then going through this training and then, you know, seeing on a daily basis what a, you know, patrolman must see in the community and then coming home. It must have a large impact on family life. What kinds of things do you do to prepare the family for?
We have outreach to spouse. We have what we call our spousal academy that we try and incorporate with every academy.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the sponsorship program is not just the sponsor of the individual, but it's the sponsor of the individual's family. You know, we do have a chain of command, and it's incumbent on the supervisors to keep tabs on the people who work for them to make sure that, you know, how can I, as a police officer, go out and meet with you on what is possibly and probably the worst day of your life because you're calling the police, mm-hmm. and not have my own house in order.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very sensitive to that, making sure that the officers are not bringing extra burdens out on the street.
Mm-hmm.
But we're in the people business, and as much as we experience out on the street, you know, we're going to have that within our own department, and we just do the best we can to stay on top of it.
Mm-hmm. It's my understanding that in most cases, policemen will say that calls for domestic violence are often the worst. Is that true?
It's hard to categorize those things. We can tell you that any violence against another person, certainly a police officer who goes to a SIDS, death of a baby,
mm-hmm.
You'll have a hard time convincing him that there's anything worse than the death of a child.
Yeah.
In terms of domestic violence or sexual assault, you know, those are the types of harm to people that just doesn't go away when the report is done or when the perpetrator is convicted and put in jail.
Mm-hmm.
There's lingering ramifications of all of those kinds of victimizations.
So if a police officer, you know, is having difficulties, you know, with, say, they've had a run of bad days, maybe a SIDS death, some violence crimes, is there some place where they can go and say, hey, you know, I just need to talk to somebody, or do they go back to their original mentor? Or?
No, we also have, obviously, there's structured sources to help, too. We have, there's Magellan Services, which is contracted with the municipality. The chain of command identifies this, and we have human relations experts within the department and also within City Hall. So there's a tremendous amount of a safety net. I shouldn't say tremendous amount, but there is a safety net that is available. And once again, it's incumbent on the officer's chain of command to work with the officer, identify the risk factors, and to get the officer the help that he or she might need.
Mm-hmm. You were talking a little bit about recruiting, and you mentioned earlier that you don't know whether the applicants are male or female. But how are we doing as far as hiring female officers and to reflect, I don't know, do you do it as a reflection of the number of women in the community or Is there some standard?
There's no quota. Mm-hmm. There is no quota. But what I can tell you for 2008, which is, I had a feeling you might ask me this question. I pulled the numbers for 2008. And if you want, I can just give you a quick breakdown.
Sure.
For males, for African Americans, we've hired 2. For females, we've hired 1. For natives, we've hired 1 male. Asian Pacific Islanders, 1 male. Hispanic, 1 male, 1 female. White, 38 males, 3 females. Other, and as you know, some people choose to mark themselves as other. We've hired 1 male, and there have been no females who've marked themselves as such. So there's been a total of 44 males and 5 females who've hired, who've been hired through the process.
Mm-hmm. Why is it that the number of, you know, we talk a lot about, in the Native community at least, talk about the difficulty with dealing with Native issues in Anchorage. And I know, you know, we're going to talk about the increase in the number of people who are moving here who are Native. Why do so few Natives apply for jobs at the police department? Do you have any idea? Or?
No, I don't. And it's not for lack of us trying and showing up at various functions and job fairs and trying to be as responsive as
AFN.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we're trying to be as responsive as we can. And it might very well be the fact that there may be some experiences that people have had growing up where becoming a police officer was not something that they would really like to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our reality. And there have been people who have had bad experiences with police officers. There's been people who have been, you know, for instance, if I go up and I arrest somebody, an older brother of somebody, and take him away that day, I can't go back into that same neighborhood, put my arm around the younger brother and mm-hmm. say, I want to be your mentor, I want to be your best friend. It doesn't work like that.
Right. You are listening to Community Forum on KSKA. Today we're talking about police in Anchorage. My guest today is Rob Hune, the Chief of Police. Give us a call if you have questions. Our local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433, or our toll-free 1-888-353-5752, and by email at communityforum@ksKA.org. If you're listening in the evening, you can't call in because the program has been pre-recorded. What kinds of the things that I hear the most, at least when I in, you know, daily roaming around talking to friends, is that you know, somebody had their home burglarized, they broke in, threw their junk around, didn't seem to take very much except for a big screen TV. And it takes a long time for the police to respond to a call. Is it because it's a nonviolent crime, or why is that?
Don't forget, our dispatchers have to prioritize the calls for service as they come in. And as I mentioned before, the priority one calls that usually you'll see the officers moving to very quickly are matters of life and death. And then there'll be disturbances where there's the potential for harm that the officers will be going to. If you have a burglary and you call the police department, we will respond. And if we're not responding to the burglary, now I want to be very careful, that's to a burglary in your home. There are thefts that we don't respond to. If there are no, if there is no suspect information, say your vehicle gets broken into and somebody steals something out of your vehicle, there's no suspect information, you can file a report online. And we have, you go to the APD website that I mentioned before, and you can file that report online. And unfortunately, we just can't send an officer to every property crime that's out there.
Mm-hmm. Do people get told that when they call in? You know, for example, it may take 5 or 6 hours for someone to show up to look in.
They get called. They get told it'll take a while, and then it's our policy to call back and let people know, you know, we still have you. Would you still like us to be out there to respond? Again, mm-hmm. a lot of it has to do with what we call the call stack, how many calls for service are awaiting an officer, and what the prioritization of those are.
Mm-hmm. Okay, back to the phones. Lisa on line 2, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I was going back to the police academy, and we were talking about the numbers of females that actually have joined the force. I was wondering what the requirements are, if they differ between male and female. Obviously, men are stronger than women, it seems. What kind of requirements there are for women, and, you know, if it's a difficult requirement, and that's why you think we have less women on the force.
At least I could tell you that the requirements are the same, because when you're out there on the street, the job requirements are the same. And being a police officer can be a very dynamic job. You can be actually riding around in your car for a long time, and then you have to get out and be very physical with someone. And so that is why we do a blind selection process. I think it's incumbent on us to let women know that these job opportunities are available. This lifestyle, it's more than a job. It certainly is a lifestyle to be a police officer. And we cannot put people out on the street who cannot not attain the same level of expectation in doing their job. I hope that answers your question.
It does. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Lisa. Scott on line 7, welcome to the show.
Yes, I'd like to congratulate the chief over the work this summer. We've certainly seen a reduction in the obvious prostitution in that in Anchorage, especially around Spinard. So congratulations.
Well, thank you for that. We still have a ways to go. If you're calling from Spinard, you know that.
Well, I just passed through. I've not. It's not where I live. I did have a deal this summer. I was a flagger. Working with a road construction, and there were a few officers that had a rather strong disregard for flagging and the reduced speed limits there. One that was notorious for flipping on his lights every time he went by and then turning them off as soon as he got through the deal. Is that something that I would call your office, or...
That certainly is. That certainly is. And if you've been flagging, you probably also know that we have officers who are often detailed, particularly to the state jobs. So if officers are not above the law, and if indeed that is going on, that's the kind of things we need to know about, particularly if you have a car number. I'm sure I like to think it is the aberration and not the rule. But I would really, and as would any other officer on the department, if you have a concern regarding that you do call us, and we take every complaint very seriously.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for your call, Scott. People do talk a lot about sort of the revitalization of parts of Anchorage. I think Spinard, for some time, you know, it was highlighted because it did have a large prostitution area, or I didn't live here at the time, but there were a lot of jokes about why do lawyers live on the hillside and prostitutes live in Spinard or something like that. But anyway, it seems like we've come a long way from the pipeline years when money was just flowing everywhere, and now we're sort of, I don't know, bubbling along at what kind of seems to be a growing, busy, small city. What things do you see cropping up right now that are concerning you as chief?
Sure. I can tell you that one of the things is our street inebriates, and I think that is something that is so very visible to so many people, and it's very frustrating to us as police officers simply because, you know, you're talking about an officer possibly running code, which we call with lights and sirens on, to a man down or a person down, and we can't vet them to know if it is somebody who has had too much to drink or it's somebody who's had a heart attack or whatever. So every time an officer runs code through town, not only is he putting himself in jeopardy, but other people on the road are being put into jeopardy. Then when we do get there and we find it's a chronic inebriate, it generally takes us about 30 or 40 minutes to clear that call. We either have to call CSP or transport the individual ourselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just this year, there's been, and I'm identifying this as a problem because it takes up precious time that officers can be on the street and responding to so many of those other calls that we were talking about. But there's been over 2,600 drunk transports by APD officers, and we responded to over 5,700 calls for police service specifically requesting help with inebriates. In general, we pick up about 200 of them a day, and the alcohol level is about 0.25 or more. The average is about 0.25.
Isn't that like approaching poison level?
Or? Well, for a lot of people, that's maintenance.
Wow.
So, or thereabouts. So it's a concern. And the drain on the police resources obviously becomes apparent. There's become an increase in reported crimes of disorder and theft regarding the inebriates. These folks are apt to be victimized themselves. And we're especially concerned with women who are part of that subculture. They become more susceptible to sexual assaults, and many of those sexual assaults go unreported.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they're a hazard to motorists, too. Remember last year we had a rash of pedestrian accidents. And so that's of concern. And there is a new, they closed Clitheroe, but now that location's being reopened again with the secure
This was
detox.
An alcohol treatment facility. Mm-hmm.
Right, that's correct. And we have 10 beds as a result of legislative action sponsored by Senator Johnny Ellis, where it's going to be a secure rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hoping that that is successful, because the volume is such that we need to do something. And it's impacting the quality of life for other people in their neighborhoods also. It's not just a public safety problem for the potential victims who have this substance abuse problem, but also for the people in the neighborhoods who deal with them.
Yeah. I want to talk about that a little bit more, but first all, let's pick up Clay on line 5. Welcome to the show, Clay.
Hi, good afternoon. A long time ago, I was a policy and budget director for the Assembly, and I did a couple of policy analysis things on the police and fire department, or public safety section back in those days when Tom Fink was mayor. And there was a model that I thought, when I heard you talking about recruitment, and there was a model I saw used in Washington and in California called the police reserve, active police reserve. And I think there had been one here, a very small number. What they were was, it was a little different than ride-alongs. It was a formal program, and these people would have to go through the same screening and the same testing that full-time police officers would. And they would have to pay for their own uniforms and so forth. But what they were was a part-time sort of auxiliary that would handle traffic control at the Sullivan Arena or minor accident write-ups. And it was a real savings. When I did the analysis years ago, they handled about 10% of the workload for police departments in California and I think it was Washington. And, I really wondered, since we have the justice program, since we have so many retired military police and military officers here, and we're always seem to be looking for people to put onto the police force that are qualified, I've always wondered why we haven't made more use of that model. And I'll just take a response off the air. And
okay, thanks for your call, Clay. Chief,
Clay, thank you for the question. And I can tell you that we are familiar with those types of programs, and there's some very good benefits to them. One of the problems with the reserve program right now, as it stands, is we're putting our money into the backgrounds and the screening of people that we can hire as full-time officers. We would have to do the same types of background and training because of, and I hate to say this, but there are liability concerns. And so it would be as an investment, and I'd be interested in the cost-benefit analysis that was done, and hopefully we could look at possibly updating that, simply because the investment we would make on recruiting and getting these people who are willing to put in time as reserves, I would still have to make sure that they meet the criteria of a full-time officer, because in a situation they would have the power, and they would have to be accredited by the Alaska Police Standards Council, and then I would have to also consider the potential liabilities involved. So I'm not saying that that doesn't have merit. I'm not saying that it isn't worth looking into. I have a threshold that I have to get over first regarding, am I going to invest in full-time officers, or am I going to invest in committed folks like that who can help us part-time but who still have to maintain their certification and their training to the level of any other full-time officer.
And I would imagine there would also have to be a certain amount of organizational support in managing.
Sure. And that would all go into the cost-benefit analysis, mm-hmm. and I haven't done that in the last 2 years.
Okay, Keith on line four, welcome to the show.
Hello. I'm sorry for the delay. I was trying to call in a while ago, but I drive for a living, and I had to wait
until
I got somewhere where I'm stopped.
It's okay.
A gentleman called in earlier upset about the insensitivity of an APD spokesman, probably Paul Honeyman, about a 12-year-old who had been drinking,
uh-huh.
and how insensitive it was to say something horrible like that. And I'm not a great big fan of APD, but I have to say that on behalf of APD, the thing that's horrifying here is the fact that somebody's 12-year-old was drinking and trying to cross the Glen Highway in the dark, wearing dark clothing, at a place where there is no crosswalk. And I have an insensitive remark, but I won't say that on the air. But the gentleman is just completely off base. The thing that's horrible here is not that anybody would mention that the child was mm-hmm. drinking. The fact is, the child was drinking. That's the scary part.
Thanks for your call, Keith. I did, you know, since we are talking about it, I did have, when I heard it, my concern was similar to what Keith was just talking about. And I'm not sure, you know, what the final analysis of that whole situation was, but I believe they were all minors.
That's correct.
They had been drinking.
That is correct.
And it was some ungodly hour of the night.
That is right.
And I was like, wow, if my 12-year-old kid was in that situation, I would be like totally freaked out.
And that is part of the problem that we're running into right now. And, you know, that in and of itself, not that this has any direct connection to our gang problem, but a lot of the kids who get involved and gravitate towards gangs are missing that parental oversight. Now, the oversight, the parents may or may not be there.
Mm-hmm.
There's that oversight. There's that vacuum of oversight that is obviously absent. And I'm not going to judge these girls' family situation. I'm not going to judge the fact whether they were new to town, they had places to go, they shouldn't have been out. I will tell you the circumstances were such that it created a tragedy, and the way we avoid tragedies is to try and fill those vacuums and give these kids some parameters and let them understand that there are consequences before they get to the point where they experience tragic consequences.
Now, as far as the inebriate situation, I know, you know, a lot of people are uncomfortable. A lot of people agree or disagree. And I know the mayor has said, you know, got a law passed saying not to, you know, give inebriates money on the street, you know, driving.
They're in the roadway.
Yeah.
Correct.
And you know, people have pretty strong feelings for and against it for some reason. And I don't know if it's because it just seems like a situation where, okay, there is no hope.
Well, that's, if I can, Nellie, that's what we've done is taken some proactive measures. You know, I went through those stats before, and that manifests itself to about 10,000 police hours going into just dealing with the chronic inebriates, okay? What we did do is form our community action policing team, which is a small unit. It's a lot smaller than I'd like it to be right now, but it's made up of four officers, a sergeant, and a lieutenant. And they, what they do is they were assigned to Fairview for a project it's called the SARA Project. And they worked with Sharon Shamard, who not only is the Fairview Community Council president, but she's also a professor, associate professor at the UAA Justice Center. And a SARA project involves scanning, analysis, response, and assessment. And what they were doing is first, because we have to deal with street crime and street-level crime. That was one of the issues in Fairview. The other issue was the chronic inebriates. Well, mm-hmm. You couldn't separate the two mm-hmm. of them. You just couldn't do that. So that began in September of 2007. And what we did, we had that team partner with the Fairview Community Council, residences, businesses, the prosecutors, the DA, the Department of Correction, and, of course, UAA. Right now, UAA is reviewing the project, but the preliminary results are very promising. I think that what we have gotten from feedback from citizen comments to CARS management in the vicinity of 12th and Gamble there is that they feel safer and they walk with their children to the store. CARS management reported sales increases of up to 15%.
Wow.
Local businesses and residents have noticed a reduction in the unconscious inebriates in the area. The wooded areas and empty lots have been cleared, and I have to acknowledge we've had folks from Brown Jug like Ed O'Neill who have been very active mm-hmm. in helping us do that, but they've been cleared, and it did reduce the criminal activities. We've secured vacant structures, and what we've also done is there's been landlords who've been warned. We have a tool. It's called AMC 8.80 for nuisance properties,
mm-hmm.
and after 8 calls, we start charging $500. So again, it's not a direct link to the homeless. To the chronic inebriates. But what it is it's part of that entire atmosphere and mm-hmm. environment that has attractive nuisance properties around and things like that.
I did work in Fairview for several years, and you know you see a lot when you're there on a daily basis, and you know you see people sleeping in places that you know look like. Maybe they could stay warm for a few hours, and you know, you see things about humanity that, you know, the person maybe on the upper hillside never even dreams occur sure. here in Anchorage. But when it comes to, you know, Fairview looks a lot better than it did 10 years ago. You know, it's got some nice landscaping and interesting new gates and fences and decorations or whatever you want to call it. But when we, you know, when we focus on a place like Fairview, does it just move the problem to Mountain View or somewhere else?
It does. I mean, right now it does, because unfortunately displacement should not be one of our strategies. Displacement is a result of some of the tactics we're taking in dealing with this problem. This summer, you know, in the woods and along the bike trails, we had increased complaints mm-hmm. about what we're calling the homeless chronic inebriates. Well, number one, they are many of the people in those camps choose not to avail themselves to the support services that are around, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're not representative of the homeless community in Anchorage, and I can't understate that much. There are homeless families in Anchorage. So when we talk about the homeless, these should not be on the poster of homeless in
yeah.
Anchorage. But the displacement, again, it ties back to the secure rehabilitation that we have to do. Many of these people, if they are chronic inebriates, they're not even going to be open to or even conscious of the potential for a lifestyle change or dealing with their substance abuse problem until they've had an opportunity to dry out for at least 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, we don't have that ability. Unless under Title 47, we can show that they are a danger to themselves or to someone else. And the threshold on that is pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to address that. It has an impact on the criminal justice system, has an impact on the social services system, and it's something that, unless it's addressed, is going to only get worse.
Mm-hmm.
And my concern is not only with the displacement from the bush, but with the economy maybe moving in the direction that it has down in the States, we're going to have our hands full.
Talking about that displacement from the bush, it's something that's been mentioned more and more. I know the mayor is concerned about it, and AFN, Alaska Federation of Natives, was talking about more people moving to Anchorage because living here is more affordable. People are moving in with relatives, so you have more than one family living in apartments or homes. What is the police department doing right now to look at this situation? I know you've mentioned it a couple of times now.
Well, first off, an awareness of it and working very closely with the school district in terms of the kids so that the kids don't get lost in the shuffle. That's where our SROs are coming in. we're monitoring it right now. We don't have the data that we would need to develop a strategy regarding it, because we, I mean, I do know the school district has showed a certain level of increased students.
I've heard anywhere from 300 to 500. Yeah.
And so we're sensitive to it. We're monitoring it. But right now, in terms of what we can do, we just have to. We enforce the laws. So if some laws are changed that would have a direct influence or a direct benefit to this situation, then we will enforce them. Mm-hmm. But we don't create the laws.
Yeah. Since this is going to be, I think, an issue of discussion potentially over the next year or so, have you been given any additional funding to look at this, or it's like another mound of vegetables on your plate to eat?
This is something we're going to be having to deal with. As I mentioned before on the budget, we're going to be requesting in next year's budget another 13 police officer slots. Mm-hmm. Additional police officers are not the answer to every problem, and we know that.
Right.
But there's going to have to be some collaborative strategies that come up, because much like dealing with the gang problem, where you have to deal with prevention, interdiction, and suppression, that can carry over. You know, the cops are viewed as the suppressive element in everything. Yet mm-hmm. we try and get involved in the prevention and in the intervention aspects of it, and that can carry over into just about anything.
And which I wanted to get to and didn't, but and we just have a little bit of time left. But it looks like our gang statistics are improving.
Our gang, I can tell you that our incidents have certainly improved. We're getting more and more information. And that's important. Without the intelligence, without the data, we have to be able to put the problem within certain parameters, and then we know what to do and we can plan for it. Certainly, our strategies, as I mentioned before, are prevention, intervention, and suppression. Our school resource officers are a tremendous source of not only dealing with crime in the schools, because that's what they're there for. They're not there to enforce school district rules.
I know
and
in
regulations.
The beginning there was a lot of people were intimidated, I think.
Right.
Now they've gotten more.
Our feedback has been generally very positive on that, and we enjoy working with the school district. They're tremendous partners in this. But again, the officers are not just there to enforce the law. They're mentoring. They're getting information that they share with the rest of the police department, because when you have a group of at-risk youth together, it's generally, you know, there's things that go on mm-hmm. and that we would like to know about. So that's very, very helpful.
Well, what are the top two things you're going to be working on for the rest of this year?
Well, we're going to be working on one is capital. As we've been growing the police department, and as the legislature has put in some has initiated new laws, we have new responsibilities regarding the storage of evidence,
mm-hmm.
and our police department right now is too small to handle us and all those demands. So there's going to be a capital project that we're working with that we'll
and
we're
number
gonna
two
have to stay for.
Quickly,
real quick is going to be the ongoing youth violence problems. We think we're making inroads in that. We want to continue those inroads.
Thank you very much, Chief Hume, for being here. I'm sure we'll have you back again.
Is that a promise?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm your host, Nellie Moore. I'll see you again next week when we'll be discussing our museum. Have a good week.
Community Forum is a production of KSKA's News and Public Affairs Department. If you have questions or comments concerning this program, write to us, KSKA 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska 99508, or email us at communityforum@kska.org. Additional information on today's show topic, including relevant website links, will be posted along with audio of today's program on our website at ksga.org/communityforum. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400 during regular business hours. This is KSKA, Anchorage.